Hey founders, this is the SaaS Boss Show, the podcast for SaaS founders in the growth stage who want to get unstuck, build high-performing teams, and get clarity about how to build a profitable startup. Every week, I interview SaaS consultants, coaches, and experts who work with dozens of startups just like yours and share their best strategies to overcome the daily challenges of growing a profitable SaaS. My name is Natalie Luniva, and I'm a growth and leadership coach to SaaS founders, and I'm also married to a SaaS founder, and I'm so pleased that you've joined us on this conversation. Hi, everyone, and welcome. My name is Natalie Luniva, and I'm growth coach, and I help SaaS founders get unstuck, clarify marketing priorities, and grow high-performance remote SaaS teams. I'd like to welcome my guest, Val Geiser, an email marketing conversion copywriter and strategist. Val is the founder and CEO, and that's the chief email officer at Fix My Churn, where she and her team are focused on improving customer messaging. Val is ridiculously obsessed with email and customer retention. And thank you so much for taking this time to share your expertise with my community, Val.
I'm so happy to be here.
We both share the same message that you don't have to get more sales, demos, trials, right? Like top of funnel, in order to grow your bottom line, your MRR. Can you help frame the conversation a little bit and just give us a summary of what we'll be talking about today?
Yeah, I'm really interested in customer churn and how, you know, having a positive impact on customer churn can be beneficial to your business and how it can impact that bottom line, right? So that's something that is very near and dear to my heart. And for me, a lot of that stems through email. So I definitely, you know, our work at Fix My Churn, we touch a lot of other things. We touch SMS and help documentation and in-app messaging and all of those things. But the kind of center of all of that is email. So email is how we talk to customers when they're not coming to our app. That's where they are. So we go to them. So email is the core of our work. And I believe in very, you know, human relationships with your customers. And, you know, as great as a brand is still a brand. And ultimately, people connect with other people. So that's something that's really important to me. And that email is a great way to do it.
So where do we start? I think the way that I'm thinking about this, like we probably need to first take a look at our churn metrics, right? When starting to analyze what is the problem with your clients, other SaaS companies churn, where do you start?
Yep. So I always start with, you want to know what your churn is, right? So and we look at churn typically on an annual basis, but there are cases to be made for looking at it on a monthly basis too. But really, you want to know where that cliff is, where your customers are dropping off. So it really depends on what you do and what your product provides your customers. So for some people, that could be, well, we see a sharp cliff at like 3 months. For some people, it could be 9 or 11 months. For some, it's longer. So it really depends. There's no like right answer and there's no kind of good amount of time. Like there's no metric to say whether yours is a good amount of time people are on your app or not. It just kind of depends on, you know, cycles and how people move through your product and what they're doing with it.
So it's so interesting that you mentioned the annual basis for churn measurement, which is not something that probably anyone even talk about, right? Everyone talk about monthly. And so just recently I spoke to one founder who is like, I have a very good churn. I'm like, okay, so what's your churn? And she's like, I'm not really sure, but I'm really like almost not losing anyone. And then we look at it and it's like around 7 to 8% every single month. And I'm like, you know that you're almost losing every single customer in a year.
Yeah, I think it's important to know your annual churn. It is monthly churn is important too. But when you are looking at, you know, 7 to 8% every month, that adds up over the course of a year. Like you said, it gets to be basically everyone by the end of the year. So knowing your annual churn and there have been different measures for like what makes for quote good churn rate in SaaS. And I hate to like give any statistics on it because most of the time statistics are like 2 or 3 years old and then everybody kind of hangs on them and measures by that. But I would say like on average, most people who work in churn would say that for SaaS, 7 to 8% annual is a really good churn rate. So if you're seeing higher numbers, it doesn't mean that like you're doing terrible things or that you're failing. It just like that's a 7 to 8% is like a really good churn rate. If somebody came to me and said, hey, we want help with our customer churn, our annual churn is 8%. I would say, like, great, I don't actually know how much I can help you, because that's pretty natural churn for a really strong product. Churn is one of those things that when you can impact one percentage point, so if you take your annual churn from 15% to 14%, or even 14.5, it makes a huge difference in your MRR and your ARR. So, you know, it's like you can make the tiniest little change that, whereas like acquisition, you need to grow big numbers, right? Churn, you can do little tiny numbers and see a huge impact long term.
Sounds good. So let's get some actionable advice here. So yeah. Let's say that we know that our churn is more than 8-10% a year. Where do we go next? What's your next step?
So I always look at how you're onboarding your customers. So what happens a lot of times is that we're all busy on focusing on acquisition. So we're throwing every extra dollar and, you know, new hire into acquisition. We buy Facebook ads and we do all these things to try to get new customers. And then they come in because they're enticed by your great marketing and the good product that you have behind it. And then they're like kind of just left there to figure it out on their own. So you work so hard to bring in all these new customers, and then those customers don't have the most amazing experience right away. And if you don't like something right away, human nature is to abandon it. So unless there's something that, I mean, you know, we all know exercise is good for us. And for the most part, when people start exercising, they don't like it right away. And so they quit. And then they maybe will pick it up again later, or they'll try a different activity until they find something that they actually like doing, or at least can kind of tolerate until they start liking it. And that carries over into how we interact with SaaS products. You know, if we don't enjoy the experience right away, then we aren't going to stick around. And unless it's like absolutely vital for our business. And enjoying the experience goes way beyond what your product looks like, even how it functions. You can have a ugly product that even potentially function like is missing features that are kind of crucial. But if you have a really great customer experience behind that, if you do a killer job onboarding your customers and you treat them like human beings and you help them feel like they're seen and heard, you can keep customers longer. So that you can, you know, what that does is those customers are giving you money, which then allows you to invest in your product, which allows you to invest in new features and engineers to help build and product teams to help design. You know, so there are big benefits to keeping your customers longer, and it's all through relationship building. It's really, really easy to walk away from a piece of software. It's very, very hard to walk away from a person that we know, that has sent us emails, that has called us our name, that has introduced themselves by their name. So, you know, and when you, the more people in your company that you're introducing through email, the more people they feel connected to, maybe even they send in a support ticket and someone that they got an email from is actually responding to their support ticket. So they're building human relationships. And it's harder to then walk away from a human relationship than from a piece of software. So I think onboarding is really, really important in reducing customer churn long-term. There are other like long-term retention tactics that we can talk about, but I think onboarding is the number one place where I start is, what does your onboarding look like? You know, what's happening within your free trial, if you have a free trial, if you're freemium, what's happening in those first 30 days? And then even once they're paid, whether it's immediately or post-trial, what's happening in that onboarding of being a paid customer now? Because what happens so often is that we do some kind of onboarding throughout our free trial. And then the second that customer converts to paid, we stop emailing them. I get this argument all the time. Well, I don't want to bother them. I don't want to bother them once they're paying me. And especially because if they're not using the product and then I show up in their email inbox, they're going to think like, oh, wow, I don't use that product. I'm going to cancel it. So I'm not going to email them because I don't want them to cancel. And that is just the absolute wrong mindset to be in, especially when it comes to building relationships with your customers.
And so in the end, we are basically having like a leaky bucket, right? So we're pouring all this traffic, all of those leads, trials, but yeah. Then we do not convert them well enough. Yeah. And it is 7, 8, 9 times more expensive to get a new lead rather than to retain an existing customer or lead, right? And so how do we do killer job in onboarding and retaining our customers?
So I think about it as that relationship building piece. And I use a lot of analogies because I think that they help it kind of hit home. And one that I use pretty often in the world of onboarding is something I've called the dinner party strategy. And I have a download on this that people can get. It's at fixmychurn.com/TDPS for the dinner party strategy. So you can grab that there. It walks you through it. But essentially, on a high level, the dinner party strategy is like onboarding a new customer is like having somebody over for a dinner party, right? So when somebody comes to your house for a dinner party, imagine greeting somebody at your home with the fully plated meal, spaghetti and meatballs and a fork and at the door when your coat's on and you just got there, you've never even been to their house before, you're thirsty. And that is unfortunately what we're doing as SaaS products is we're showing up as the second that they are there. We're saying, here's our product. Isn't it great? Try it. And it's the wrong approach. So you want to think about what would happen if somebody came to your house for dinner. Well, you would probably like make sure the front porch light is on so that they know where they're going. They come in the front door, you take their coat, you offer to get them something to drink. If they've never been there before, you show them around like, hey, here's the kitchen, here's the bathroom, and let them settle in a little bit. Maybe you serve some appetizers that are like out on a table for them to grab when they want them. But you're creating an ambiance when somebody comes over for dinner. And then everybody sits down and you have dinner. But you don't just have that main course. You don't just have steak that's sitting on the table. You have potatoes and salad and green beans, and you have, you know, things that go with the side dishes that go with the meal. And then you don't, as soon as everyone's done eating, you don't like grab their plates and say, okay, well, bye, everybody got to go. You know, you're probably like serving coffee after dinner and having people hang out, maybe another glass of wine. Like there's a process to having people over for dinner. And we have to think about that kind of process when we're looking at our customer onboarding. When they first come into your product. So this is like, we'll use a free trial as an example, since it's most common. You know, they sign up for the free trial and you can send a welcome email, and it's really just a welcome email. You're not talking about any of your features. You're not pushing them into the product. You're not doing anything. You're saying, hi, I'm me. I made this product and it's so nice to meet you. And I'm glad you're here because I was in your shoes 6 months ago when I was, you know, worrying about this thing, and I've figured out some solutions for it. I'm going to walk you through all of that. But right now I just want to say hi and thanks for being here. And maybe you ask them like, hey, if you have a second, can you tell me what's bothering you most about this particular thing that's happening? You know, so let's say you have a scheduling software. Well, what's bothering you the most about your schedule, about, you know, your calendar, and let them reply to you. So then after you've properly welcomed them, then you can start to serve those appetizers. So these are things like, hey, here's a download on this particular topic. Here's a blog post that we want to make sure that you read before diving into our scheduling software. Here's a video on our YouTube channel. You know, there's all kinds of ways that you can create appetizers, but you want to share something that is maybe adjacent to the product, but not the product itself. And then after you've done those two things through two separate emails, the third email is when you get to talk about your product. So this is really hard for a lot of people because they want to just dive in and get them using the product. But here's the thing, is your customers just signed up for the free trial. It's not that they aren't logging in and using your product. It's that they need to remember that you exist. You're either asking them to create a new habit out of the blue or shift from doing one thing to doing another, using one piece of software to using yours. So either they're creating something entirely new or they're shifting from an already established habit. Either one is hard. And I highly recommend reading the book. Atomic Habits is an amazing book that has nothing to do with software and everything to do with software. Because that's what we're doing in onboarding, is we're building habits. We're reminding them that we exist. We're reminding them that they matter to us, and we're asking them to establish a new habit. So then on that third email, you get to talk about your product. Now, the place where this kind of falls apart is when a lot of brands talk about the product from a features standpoint. So they talk about like, we built this and we did this and look at this thing and this is what it's called and we, you know, here it is and isn't it wonderful? Well, none of that matters to your customer. What matters to your customer is the problem that they're trying to solve. So you can talk about your product and your features in relationship to the benefits. They don't care what you call it. They care what it does. And so you want to talk about the problems that they're facing and the solution that your feature, that particular feature solves for. And then we have more, you know, side dishes. You can, after you've talked about the product some, then you go back and you talk about, you know, other ways that they can connect with you. So maybe it's like, hey, do you want to schedule a one-on-one with someone on our customer support team? Hey, do you want to watch this video? Do you want to connect in our Facebook group? You know, do you want to listen to our podcast? There's all kinds of things that you can offer that go with the product that, again, are not the actual product itself. And then the final step that, like, wrapping everything up is I call it like the bonus. So this is the dessert of the dinner party. So after everyone's eaten, you don't just shoo them out the door, you give them some dessert. And the dessert can be like, okay, well, you've now been around for a little while. Would it make sense to extend your trial? Would it make sense to join our affiliate program so you can actually earn free months on your bill? You get free months for referring other people. There's all kinds of ways we can kind of give dessert to people without again, making it like super about the product. This is just really like a framework. And everyone asks me how many emails in how many days. If I have a 14-day trial, how many emails should I send?
I was going to ask exactly the same question.
Yeah, it depends. It depends. It depends on your product. It depends on your customers. I always say, like, let's start with the dinner party strategy and maybe one or two other emails mixed in there. And then see how that goes. What are your customers? Do they need more of something? Do they need less of something? You really have to talk to your customers a lot to know. But yes, of course, 5 emails over 30 days, if you have a 30-day free trial, it's not enough. So you need to sprinkle in some more. But if you have those kind of 5 types of emails, then that really covers a lot for you.
I've heard some comments from founders who say that people unsubscribe from those emails that I've put together. So do you see that this is an average, that there's an average percentage that is like a, you know, benchmark, like this is normal? And also follow-up question about open rate. What open rate do you see is, you know, within the norm?
So your goal conversion. In most ESPs, you can set up goals for each email or for an entire sequence. A like kind of benchmark would be somewhere in 20 to 30% is considered a good open rate. But that also depends on how big your email list is. If you have 20 to 30% and your email list is 1,000 people, it's not a great open rate. But if your email list is 25,000 people, then it is. So you really have to consider, it's really hard to set benchmarks like that because you have to know how big your list is. You have to know what industry you're in. There are cases where people unsubscribe from onboarding. So there's kind of 2 routes you can go with that. The first is to have a separate unsubscribe. So you want to have set up a link that they can click that only unsubscribes them from those onboarding emails and not all of your emails. Really, really important. Some people might be very much self-starters and they don't want to be walked through the product and they don't want to do, you know, build relationship with you. They just want to use it. Great. Let them do that. The other way you can go, instead of having them unsubscribe from something they don't want, you can have them opt into something they do want. So early on in the process, you can say, hey, we're going to maybe, you know, think about it like the dinner party way, like, hey, we're going to serve dinner now. If you're hungry, come on in. If you're not, you can stay in the living room and chit chat. So in email land, that translates to, hey, we have a series of 7 emails where we're going to walk you through, you know, what the most successful customers have done to get set up and show you some examples of what other people are doing and give you some of our best tips. And if you want those things, then click here and we'll start sending those to you starting tomorrow. But inviting them to opt into it versus opting out. So you can go either way and I would test both and see what works better for your list. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely ways to avoid that. I measure open rates really cautiously because they're pretty inaccurate, to be quite honest. Open rates don't matter, click rates matter. And conversion rates matter. Open rates sometimes are low because in ESPs, there's a little image in the email that we don't see, that the tracking pixel, that if they have images turned off, it won't display. So like I have images turned off on almost all my emails. So I show as unopened to most people that I'm subscribed to, but I have opened the email.
I love the idea that you are offering them to basically to come in for dinner. And if they choose to take you up on the offer, great. If they don't, then they don't, right? This is like a whole mind shift probably where they are in control. Yes, I want to get those emails, right? And then I'm going to pay potentially more attention to them. So yes. Love this tip. Another question. So in the very first email, the welcome email, and we are trying to build relationship here, right? Have you seen the difference between founders who include a video there in the email? Maybe there's a difference in click-through rate or some metrics versus those that do not have a video there.
Yeah, it depends on the brand and what your product ultimately does. So I think that kind of without like exact numbers on me, I do think that having some kind of video in that welcome email converts better. And conversion is hard to say on a welcome email because in most cases, what we're building is typically the reply is considered a conversion because we're asking them to reply and share a problem that they're facing. But the videos, I think it actually depends on what that screenshot looks like. So if it looks like this, like branded, highly produced video, it's less likely to get clicked on than that a screenshot of just a person talking. And like ideally, actually, something like what my room looks like right now, something very human and not set up, not styled, no fancy lights and cameras, just like, hey, it's me. I'm so excited you're here. You know, these are the things that matter to me and I hope they matter to you. And if so, we're here together. And maybe you ask that question in the video and in the text, you can say like, hey, I have a question that I hope you can answer. It's in the video, please watch. And you make this like quick little minute and a half long video. Most of the time I really push for founders to be in that welcome email, but sometimes founders don't want to. So we'll do like a head of customer success or something like that. But having that like human element in the email, I think really makes a huge difference.
I would like to switch to talk about the process before even we put together those emails, what process, the research process we need to go through in order for us to put together those emails, because I thought it was really interesting how you guys do that internally.
Yeah. So we use a framework called Jobs to be Done. And Jobs is really popular in the product world. So you'll go to product conferences or events and hear about Jobs to be Done a lot. The idea behind Jobs, and it's not our framework at all, Chris Speak and Bob Moesta created Jobs, and the idea is like your customer has a job that they are trying to accomplish with your product, and it's typically not what we're selling them. So to take it out of software world, I think about like a house cleaning service. If you hire a house cleaning service and or if you're looking at a whole bunch of listings of house cleaning services, and one of them says like, we have a 4-person team that comes to your house and we use vinegar-based products and you know, whatever it is, we bring our own vacuum, like all of those things are features. But if there's a house cleaning service on that list that says, hey, we want you to spend more time with your kids. We want you to spend your hours, you know, accomplishing another project or Go to the zoo, we'll take care of the rest, you know, something along those lines, right? Like that might actually be the problem, the job that your customers have for your house cleaning service is that they want their time back. They don't want to spend their weekends with the kids cleaning toilets. And if you sell that, then you're more likely to be chosen over those other services that are just selling their features of, you know, however many people there are and what products they use and all of that. So you can apply that in SaaS too. You know, if you're like a scheduling tool, if you're selling, like we have, you know, all these different features, you can create multiple calendars and you can do all of this. Well, great. But do I never again have to send back and forth emails to schedule something? Great. That's the job I need done, is I don't ever want to do back and forth 5 emails or more to get something scheduled. I just want to send a link and be done with it. And that's the job of a scheduling software. So once you know what the job, and sometimes there's multiple jobs for your product, typically there are multiple jobs. Once you know what those jobs are, then you can start to speak to those jobs in your onboarding. And not just in your onboarding, but when we do this research, a lot of people we work with end up taking the research results. I mean, it's your true voice of customer. You can use it all over your marketing site. You can use it in your sales materials. You can use it in your presentations to VCs. You can use it all over the place. There are a lot of reasons to get to know the voice of your customer. And a lot of founders tell me, like, well, we talk to our customers every day. We, you know, they send us support requests and we get their product reviews on Capterra. And well, all that's great, but that's about the product, not about your customer. So talk to your customers about them. And there's all kinds of jobs to be done questions out there. You can search for and find, you know, different documentation of questions to ask. But I think the most important thing is to create those one-to-one interviews with your customers. And I even don't love to call them interviews. I like to call them conversations because interview kind of sounds like very formal. And most of the time it's not me asking a question and then letting them answer and then ask another question and letting them answer. It's asking a question, they answer, and then I pause and they give even more answer. And then I go to a part of their answer and say, can you tell me more about that? And then they talk more about that. And we typically get through like two or three questions of my list of 12, but I get what I need out of it. And that just takes practice doing that.
I know that you have a very cool list of things that you do that even before you talk to the customers. For example, you would check our reviews and then you also, you know, look around Facebook group.
Amy Hoy calls it a sales safari. So she kind of coined that term of, you know, you go at Amy Hoy and Alex Hillman together in their 30 by 500 course. And in Sales Safari, you're going into your Facebook group and reading responses without interacting with them. You're reading through reviews. One of my favorite things to do is to go onto Amazon. And so let's say there's a book that is related to the problem that you're solving. So you find a book and you go to those 3-star reviews of that book, because the 3-star reviews are going to tell you what they really liked and then what's missing. And that's going to give you so much information about, you know, what people need in the world and what you can create and how you can solve the problem more for them. You know, we definitely do all those kinds of things, digging in where we can. A lot of that just already exists online. Plus, that's the stuff you can do at like 10 p.m. when you're thinking about it versus having to set up like surveys and interviews take more time during regular hours.
What are some other questions that I didn't ask you but should have?
We didn't really talk about like, what do you do once they're a customer? And, you know, because that's where the churn comes into play, right? So they can't really churn until they're a paying customer. And I think like, obviously identifying where that cliff is for you and then working backwards from that drop-off point. So look through what your customers are doing and identify what successful customers are doing. So what are they doing either early on to establish themselves as a customer or maybe on a monthly basis? What actions are they taking that may say this is going to be a customer long-term? And then you find the opposite of that. What are the things that are not happening for the customers that are dropping off? So you'll take somebody who churned last month and look at their activities the couple of months leading up to that churn. So maybe they clicked into their billing page multiple times. Maybe they stopped coming in, like they were actively signing into their dashboard and now they didn't for 2 months. Maybe they sent more than 3 help requests, or they were like searching documentation on your knowledge base a lot. So there's activities that your customers are doing that indicate that there's a potential that they might churn. And so we want to get ahead of that and say, okay, when did those activities start? Okay, 3 months before they churned. Great. So then we're going to start sending messaging 4 or 5 months before that cliff, where we start to talk to them about the issues that they're facing and how we can solve for that. Maybe it's that we're offering, you know, some one-on-one time, or maybe we have a weekly webinar that people can come on live and ask questions. Or maybe there's a Facebook group of other users. There's all kinds of ways we can engage with our customers beyond sending out new feature release emails. I think that that's what I see from most brands is like, once they're a paying customer, all we're sending is their invoice and feature releases. And just doesn't continue to build a relationship. It makes, you know, especially if you're doing a really great job with onboarding and you build this relationship, and then the second they pay you, now they're just a credit card number to you. And they're just a number of customers. And it just doesn't feel good as a customer. So if you can continue to build relationship, offer events they can attend, you know, ways for them to connect with your team, ways for them to connect with other users, all of those things will help build community around your product. And I've seen so many products where they have built this community, and the community will even be saying like, I'm really frustrated by this product. Like, I wish that these three features exist and I can't believe they don't exist, but I'm, you know, I love you guys and I'm here and like, we're working through it together and I believe in them. You know, I've talked to the team. So there's a lot of goodwill that's built through just talking to your customers on a regular basis beyond your, you know, whatever you're doing. Talk to them about what they're doing. Offer to show off what they're doing. You know, we want to tell your stories. We want to hear your success stories, and we want to feature your company in our, on our, this page or in our next video series or whatever we're doing. And especially if you've told somebody's story, it's really hard for them to say, I don't use that software anymore. So yeah, you can do a lot of things post-conversion to keep customers long-term, and then also to prevent churn when you start to see those signals that they are potentially heading out the door.
You've mentioned weekly webinars. This is actually what we started doing at my husband's SaaS, where every single week we invited everyone, both leads, customers, mm-hmm. those who sign up for trial, those who just sign up into our email list, in our Facebook group, for example, all of them are invited to join our weekly session where once a week for 1 hour, we talk about very briefly what's happening in the product or success stories. And then we allow them to ask a bunch of questions. This is actually killing so many birds with one stone, where we talk to them, they see us, they tell us that, hey, even those that are on trial right now, they tell us, okay, this puts you on a completely different level than your competitors, because then I know that at least once a week, I will be able to talk to you and get my questions answered. Yeah. But then you also create this content that you can also just cut some clips of you answering questions, and then you can add them to your, I don't know, product information or whatever. So many things to use this valuable information. The biggest one is obviously building those relationships.
Yeah. And, you know, you can also take the recordings of those webinars and hand them over to your support team and say, here, everything that's in here that doesn't have a knowledge base article needs one. Use this to build out your knowledge base. And even like you said, you can put the clip on that knowledge base page, but then also have the written article as well. So there's so many opportunities there. And yeah, it does create that community feel, and people feel like they listen, like all human beings want is to feel seen and heard. And on a weekly webinar, you get to do both. So yeah. It does a lot.
You mentioned that we ideally would like to track where people fall off. Do they start logging into their dashboard, or have they put multiple requests, or are they searching their documentation, for example? What are some tools that you use to track all of those steps so that you can then identify, hey, this person searched for five, I don't know, documentation pages?
There's a lot of products you can use. The top two that we use are Mixpanel and Segment. So Segment tends to be the most popular, although, you know, they're kind of hand in hand, but it does involve some engineering hours of getting things set up so that the proper data is being tracked. But once you have, it's engineering hours that once they're done, they don't have to keep happening. So it's kind of like, it's nice. It's like it pays dividends down the line. So once they set up all of the tracking elements, so you can say like, here are the things that we think are happening and the things we want to track. And engineering can connect those data points for you to a tracking tool like Segment or Mixpanel. And then you have the ability to use that data and say, okay, well, what is happening and where are people dropping off and what are those activities that they are doing or not doing prior to dropping off? And then it also allows you to see what really great customers are doing, like the people who stick around for a long time and are highly active. What are the activities that they're doing? So it's really worth the engineering time. Once that data is connected and we're able to see what our customers are actually doing, that can help inform the product. So then we won't spend a ton of engineering hours building something that they don't even need or want, but we'll focus on features that they want and use and need more than anything. But we don't know that without knowing what they're doing with the product. So you need that kind of tracking in place to know what to do, not only from an email perspective and onboarding and churn, but also from like how to build your product.
Any last parting words?
I just encourage everybody to do something. Right. So I think we get, that's why I created the dinner party strategy, because we get in our own heads about like, okay, well, what should I put here and here, and what cadence should I give it? You know, how many emails over how many days? Just build something. Even if you just create those 5 emails from the dinner party strategy, get that download, follow the templates and create your own version of it. And then you'll start to get data back. Every time people do that, when I share about this strategy, they tell me like, I have put something in place and now I have some information that I can work off of. And so just don't get in your own head about it. Use a framework that exists and then start to track your data and go from there. Email's never done. So you just have to kind of constantly iterate on it.
Awesome. This has been very helpful. Thank you so much for that. Where can listeners find more information about you?
Sure. Well, fixmychurn.com is our home site, and you can get that dinner party strategy download there. It's fixmychurn.com/TDPS. And then I'm on Twitter at @LoveValGeisler. You can come say hi. I'm not on Facebook very much, so if you friend request me, I probably won't accept it. But come say hi on Twitter. That's where I'm friends with everybody.
Sounds good. Awesome. Cool. Thank you so much, Val. And that's it for this episode. For those tech founders who have a remote team, I have a question. Do you find yourself that it's much faster for you to do things by yourself than waste all of that mental energy delegating tasks to someone? And so you either don't hire anyone, or if you already have a remote team, you're guilty of doing those tasks by yourself, because there's just so much energy goes into delegating the tasks and then just managing people. Are you able to take a few days off and not be worried that your servers will go down or your support is going to blow up? What if you could work on more strategic, important things and let your team fix the bugs? If you only started building your team in the last couple of years, I guarantee that you are making lots of mistakes that hinder your growth without even realizing that. Oftentimes, you, the founder, may end up being the bottleneck to your team's success. That is definitely hard to swallow, but it's true. But also look on the bright side. This is also the easiest problem for you to fix, because you are in control of how to fix it. I'll be launching soon a program that will help tech founders improve your team performance, and as a result, remove the roadblocks to scaling your SaaS just by improving your operations and team dynamic. This is really the shortcut. To be notified when it's live, go to my website, natalieluneva.com/team. natalieluneva.com/team.